Welcome to Green Beers Podcast. This is Mike Savage,
Austin Shiner,
Ani,
and Charlie.
On this week's episode of Green Beers Podcast, we have a great new beer. It is from Distilled Brewery out of Illinois, and we're also going to talk about some of the, well, not only their sustainability efforts, but some things that utilities are doing to help individual customers, commercial and industrial customers, take charge of their demand through some program called Bring Your Own Device. But first,
we brought our own beer.
Right.
Yeah, we did. So Distilled Brewery came to us because I was looking for a beer with my wife, and we were just walking down. She likes sour beers, and we went to Yankee Spirits in Attleboro, and they have a lot of beers, like a huge selection of beers. So we just picked out about three different sours, and this was the most sustainable one.
And how do we know it's the most sustainable one? You researched it, and...
Well, so the other option would be Foolproof Brewing out of Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Unfortunately, it's good beer, but they don't...
So did you know Distill was sustainable when you bought it? No. You went. No. You backfilled the research on that one. You picked the beer, and then you went and looked, and you said, hey, these guys actually...
It's worthwhile to talk about.
This is a green beer.
Yeah.
Sample.
But then sample time.
What defines sustainability for these guys?
Wow, it's damn sour.
That's good.
But not extremely tart, actually. It's fruity, but not overly tart.
Tastes like kombucha, you know, fermented tea.
This is a Gose, which is a particular style. As you said, it's a sour. It's a German-style sour beer. But you know what? I've had other ones from local Boston breweries that are much more sour.
Absolutely.
And almost hard to drink.
The Trillium beers are almost all more sour than this, and I really like them, but some people, they just, you know, make that pucker face and can't really take it.
That's really good.
Yeah, I like this.
I like it. Distill apparently brews a whole lot of different styles. They're not wedded to one style. That's got blueberry in it. This is the Blueberry Ghost, but it's called the Wild Sour.
Right. Implying wild fermentation with wild yeasts. It's I know that the FDA regulates that kind of thing in this country in a way that you don't have in Belgium, right, where there are restrictions on this, leaving just giant pots of carbs open to just pick up anything in the atmosphere.
Right.
Whereas in Belgium, you can just do
have well. At it, and you're at your own risk.
But there's a way, just let the little microbes attack it and just see what happens. But here there are rules for how you can introduce yeast.
Yeah. I mean, this is a very specialized beer, so it's hard to rate a brewery on something this esoteric, but
yeah.
I will say they've done a really good job with this one. Usually you add fruit to a beer, you feel like you're getting a smoothie or some perversion of beer, but this is really,
this is
tasty and not too sour, as we said.
There's a lot of atrocities out there. This is not
yes.
one of them.
Ani, could we get an aroma check? Because I think it smells like something unexpected and nice, but that I get a whiff of not acid and not alcohol.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle there, and it's not as fruity as the previous beer that we had, which had fruit in it. I don't remember the brand, but yes, it's not as fruity, but...
To me, right, so
it has a very sour beer smell. It's a typical beer smell.
But the color is essentially like Smucker's jam, and it smells a little
bit... It looks really beautiful.
A little bit like... Smucker's jam, but to me, there's another layer to the aroma and a little bit to the flavor, which is a creamy, buttery quality.
Yes.
Like there's a, like buttered toast, lightly, more jam than butter, but a little bit of butter on the toast.
Which, let's face it, is your perfect piece of toast.
Well, right, sure. Only a crazy person only puts jam
on. But to be clear,
toast.
It doesn't taste sweet when you... It doesn't taste sweet. It does have that creamy stuff. You're right.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know where that would come from.
So I like this. I would go out and buy this Ghost.
Yeah. So what ratings would you guys give this?
Well, I think we need to take the taste as part of the rating. We also need to discuss the sustainability of how it's made.
Right.
That's going to be a part of our...
Have we rating. Integrated that into the ratings?
We are now, yeah.
No, just this year. That's, so that throws off our ratings.
Yeah.
That throws off our ratings. All right.
We'll have a re-rating day.
A re-rating day.
Yeah. All right. That'll be a special pod.
Yeah, where you guys are going to have to go back and bring down some of your ratings. You've got that up at eights and nines.
It's like, you've already
there's no room at the top.
I like the flavor. If we add in some sustainability, this one, I'm not going to have anywhere to go up.
Well, luckily, their website is full of environmental actions that they have taken from preserving farmland and taking into account well, first they talk about all the farms that they get their local product from honey to milk and pork and cream. I don't know how that's included in making beer, but it is somehow. And then they also have purchasing of recycled material, their waste reduction component, their water conservation, and how they also participate in pollution prevention.
I really like, and it's the first time we've seen a brewery talk about this, green supply chain, because really, for any corporate entity looking at sustainability, it's only so much you can do on your own facility. If you're really going to make a difference, you go to the people you're buying from and say, here are my expectations, and that's where you start to really have an impact. And they have that in here. They're buying packaging products that are reusable, recycled products, etc. So that's a real commitment on their part. They're taking all their waste grain, giving it to local farms for food, so that's a lot of solid waste.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about the water conservation issues of that consortium of breweries in Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah.
This group, brewery does not seem to have the same issues from a water quality standpoint. But they nonetheless are committed to water conservation.
If I want to be nitpicky, it does feel like a marketing person had a hand in writing some of these. Energy conservation, the first thing they list is that they maintain their HVAC system.
Which would be a pretty good thing to do if you want to stay warm in Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, we know, look, credit for them for emphasizing the green.
Yeah.
We know from our other pods that breweries use a huge amount of water, that if you're really serious about water conservation, you have to do some significant water treatment. You have to reuse as much of the water as you can for gray water. They don't mention any of that, so they don't have the same issues that the Burlington breweries had. They talk about water conservation in their faucets and their dishwashers, all good. But, you know, there's room for improvement on this, for sure.
I think, in my opinion, first is hitting the whole value chain or the supply chain is very important. And it's a stand that not many corporations actually take, which Charlie mentioned. But what I think would add more weightage to this analysis or the summary that they have shared is some quantification. Quantification in terms of what effect or impact they've had in their carbon footprint going before and after this change and retrofit that their management has taken. I think that would really, be a very good message out there of what good they're doing.
Yes.
All right. Well, with that said, now let's rate this beer.
Rating time?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Austin.
So the way this works now is that the sustainability profile will, if I like it, if I think it's legit and that they're in that first tier of sustainable breweries, I'm giving them a bump on my overall rating.
Yeah, so yeah. I would describe it as an internal, like inside of you.
How much more delicious is this beer given that I know, right, that I know that they're doing the right thing for...
It's that
the species.
Green, what sort of green glow or green boost are you getting?
I think that heretofore, my ratings have hovered around between 6 and 7.
5 and 6.
Wow. Well, you've got a tally? You know, yeah. That's amazing. 5 and 6. Yeah, so this comes up to a 7.2, 7.3,
wow.
7. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. My first seven.
Yes, still, you've actually done it.
Seven.
You
yeah.
made it.
Yeah. That's DESTIHL is the way you spell this brewery. It's an Illinois brewery, and you just got a through the roof rating from Austin, China.
Yeah.
That's a
full 5 point stock.
That's a full.
It's a full 7.2. Now just all right,
so mine have hovered where in between 9 and 9.5.
So I have
pretty
to
much.
Be honest to all the listeners there. I have the ratings for the last two podcasts, which are 7 and 7.
So oh, I've given 2 sevens.
Two okay. sevens.
Yeah, no, this is a good beer. I would give it. This is a really good beer. I'd give it an 8.5. It's not as high for me as the Trilliums or the Treehouses, but it's a very, very good beer. And I'm getting some green glow off it,
yeah.
So I might even push 8.5/9. But yeah, it's good, very good. They did a great job with this.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, I love sour. Any bite, just lemon juice is great. For me, I just... so... This is
lemon on everything.
This is like a 7.7, a green boost of like 8.1.
Wow.
Yes.
Green glow.
Green glow, yeah.
So 7.7 or 8.1? You've been hovering between 8 and 8.2. So that whole argument or the discussion of how we are hitting the high bands from before applies more to you because they have always been in the 6 and the 7 range.
Well, I really like... like the beers we're drinking, I have nothing else to really add to that. So as we talk about this brewery, one of their major aspects that they said they've done is install some controls from dimmable lighting to smart thermostats or programmable thermostats. Now, as we look at what utilities are doing with thermostats, interesting enough, like. The program in Rhode Island, where I live, is offering smart devices, anything like a Nest or an Ecobee, something that allows you a Wi-Fi programmable thermostat, allows me to change the temperature from my phone. But it also, I can get paid $25 by the utility to allow them to make my house colder during peak days. Peak days are times when it's really hot and steamy and there's a strain on the electric grid. It happens about 8 times a year. They last for about 3 hours. And the utility does not want to turn on their peaker plants, which cost a lot of money to run. So what they're trying to do is use less energy. And this is a smart way of doing it with programmable thermostats. But there's also a lot of other ways that utilities are going about this. So, Ani, do you want to talk about some of the other DG assets and really how utilities are getting smarter with using less?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go from state by state, so this analysis or this article that Utility Dive released, they called it the BYOD, Bring Your Own Device, wherein they discuss the different policies that states have implemented. So the states that they are talking about are Vermont, Mass, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and New York, basically the New England states. And to just go really quickly on what each state is doing. So in Vermont, there's a utility called Green Mountain Power, GMP. They are looking at bringing in distributed generation assets for the customers, but in a way that the customer buys it, they incentivize the purchase, and then the DG asset will only be accessed by the utility after it serves the baseline for the customer. In events,
what
and if...
What kind of distributed generation are they talking about? Solar, batteries?
Yeah, so
batteries.
Basically,
batteries.
Yeah, solar and batteries.
And how are they charging those? How are they charging those batteries?
PV tied system, so a PV battery system that's
okay.
being charged. And
so you'd have solar charging your battery.
Right, and then what the utility will do is really look at, all right, it's going to be really hot on July 15th. We're going to take that 5 kilowatts from your system, and
yeah.
it's all Wi-Fi connected. They're doing it through the internet, and they're going to send you a note saying you're going to lose this. But they're smart about it. If it's a hurricane, we really don't. I'm from Vermont. You don't really get hurricanes in Vermont. You don't need to be from Vermont to know that. But you do get storms that will knock out power.
Yeah.
Well, Superstorm, was it Sandy? Irene came right up. The town where my in-laws live, 3 out of the 4 ways to get there were wiped out for a month.
I mean,
you had one bridge into town.
Yeah. But the reason why I bring that up, because the utility, if there's a storm coming, they will not utilize your power, your resilient backup, that battery system.
So that you have it available to
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And they look to phase in the phase two, wherein they hit a critical mass as a utility integrating with an aggregated pool of distributed generated assets so that they can serve their peak shaving demands. And basically, last year they did a test run and they saved around $750,000 in 1 hour of a peak demand or peak event. So they saved that much.
By
so
pulling from these
customer
resources.
By pulling in
resources.
From these aggregated
DGs. So question for you. Let's play this out. Apologies, because we got three more states to do. We may have to save
fine.
This for another
This
pod.
Is a good This is
but
a good navigator.
You've got, you own a house or even a business down the road. You've got your solar and your battery. You're probably using that battery yourself for resilience, so it provides you backup in the event that the grid goes down, right? How else are you using it?
So you can, this is a study by Brattle Studies basically released this. So DGs help and batteries especially help with ancillary services, which are grid services, wherein they help with frequency regulation for the grid whenever the grid asks you, does demand reduction, which we know of. They also do a lot of T&D investment deferrals for the utility.
Well, that's the value for the utility. But if I'm an end user and I have a battery system, the only true way I'm going to make money off that battery is a program like this that pays me in a state that does not have time of use. Right? If there's time of use and it's really cheap to charge at night, I'm going to charge that battery.
You don't have to sell anything in order to make money on it if you have time of use.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So if you're in a state where the energy costs a lot when there's high demand, in other words, they've rated it to disfavor, they've set the rates to disfavor use when they need you people to cut back.
Mm-hmm.
So at the peak demand is typically late afternoon. If there's a higher rate late afternoon than at middle of the night, you'd use your battery, you'd charge your battery at night on the cheap power, and then you use it, discharge it during the high rate time in the afternoon, meaning so you're pulling less from the grid and you're saving money.
And of course, if it's PV connected, then of course in the mid afternoon, if you're in the summer or you have a lucky winter day in Vermont, then of course you can actually not draw from the grid at all because you're
right.
running entirely on your roof.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So
right.
those two things go together.
Right. So if you're a homeowner, this is the and you're in a time of use state. That's the value of the battery to you. Setting aside these specialized programs, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're not in a time of use state, what's the value of this of these assets?
So,
these programs, basically.
I mean, are you installing a battery for resilience? Are you installing a battery because you want to make money, right?
Right.
And that's the question. Because without this program, there's no real return on investment on a battery. It's a device that sits there for a rainy day. Literally, when it rains too hard, power goes out.
I actually beg to differ, because when you're participating in a grid service is basically compensated to the user.
But if those programs are available,
right?
Yeah. Which Green Mountain Power is basically
right.
saying we are going to put that in.
In the same way that ancillary services are rate-based, in where the utility puts forward the rate case and you put that into your rate base, then you just have to have a progressive enough administration in that state to then pass that on to the people who are providing the ancillary service.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many states for which that's true.
They call this, I don't know the number, to be honest, but that's what they call it, the how utilities have to be more modern would be the right word towards a flexible load.
Yeah.
How do they keep moving between something what they previously envisioned, this is our peak demand period and this is only when we need maximum load, but then soon with more DGs on site,
yeah.
they realize the peak is actually going off. It's coming at different other times that they did not expect. So they got to be a little more.
There could be a fun analogy even to something like Amazon, where of course Amazon both is the platform and the seller often, but not always, of course, that incorporates all of these third-party sellers into its platform. It's a little bit like that. The utility, of course, is it manages the network and delivers power, but is also in allowing its users, essentially, to provide essential services that they used to be entirely responsible for.
Exactly.
Right? So that feels like a very 21st century approach to electricity, a little bit the way we've adjusted retail.
Absolutely, because you're now as a homeowner with a battery, you're actually now part of the utility.
Right, you're part of the ecosystem.
You're not just
like a third-party seller on Amazon.
Exactly, you're like a third, right.
Yeah. And there's people who want the battery for that resilience aspect, a cleaner way of having resilience for at least a few hours. You have solar, you can recharge it every day, hopefully. And then
the number of homes in Vermont, just as an example, after Irene that bought propane or diesel-fired backup generators is very high.
Sure.
Now, the total emissions from that aren't huge, but you know, you lose the power a lot in Vermont, and if you knew that for every 5 hour or less event you could use your battery and you cared about it,
a shared infrastructure like every homeowner has a battery, that will become the largest power plant in the world if we can interconnect it all.
If everybody's got one, right. Yeah, and I think all 34 of our listeners are likely to be in states where there's a program where they could get a battery in the next couple of years.
It's possible.
This is a real opportunity.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. Do you want to look at
other states?
Yeah, I mean, it's
just give us a couple of examples of other programs.
Just few words, basically describing Mass, Connecticut, and New Hampshire. They are looking at utilities becoming aggregator of aggregators, which means they want to install equipment or smart thermostats in customers' houses or their ratepayers' houses and facilities and control them by themselves. So that is something that I don't agree with, but it's one of the solutions that Mass, Connecticut, and New Hampshire basically are coming out with. They want to be an aggregator of aggregators.
So that they would install smart technology in people's homes, but the utility would control it remotely and be able to, within some sort of presumably authorized range by the Public Utility Commission, able to change your temperature sets or access your water heater as a storage.
Yeah, the heat pump and all of that. Yeah.
Yes.
And I just feel that's very contrary to where utilities should be going, in my opinion. But
well, it's part of a larger conversation. We've done this in other, we've had parts of this conversation, but here at Renew in the last 3 weeks, we've seen a number of projects that are under pressure to move away from natural gas and towards electrification. So we're actively pursuing what does it mean to take a building off natural gas and do everything with electricity, heat pumps, water heaters. All heating requirements would move from what they currently are, which is fossil fuels, to stuff that's powered by the grid. But each one of those devices becomes potentially a device that could be controlled by the utility.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting policy questions and privacy questions around that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, rather than having the utility control your thermostat, I'd rather see progressive policy that sends the price signal to the consumer to turn down their thermostat on their own because they'd like to save. Right. Savings matter to a middle class family in Massachusetts. You'd rather have it 60 degrees with a sweater than 75 degrees in your beachwear in January. Right. I mean, so rather than let a utility control, let's send the price signal.
And there's controls and programmable thermostats and programmable controls for these devices that allow people to make those choices.
Yeah. And I'll leave on this point. I think it's interesting. Rhode Island offers that program where they'll pay you to have access to your smart thermostat.
Huh.
But they do not have time of use. So they are taking a weird position.
Yeah.
Because they're not incentivizing people
in
to participate.
In the traditional sense, no.
Right.
Which,
you have to dry your clothes at 3 in the morning. Which is what they've got to be doing. Do your laundry in the middle of the night. Yeah, but
you could throw it in the dryer before you go to bed.
I mean, and then set a timer to turn it on.
Dishwashers have timers to start and set it at plus 4 hours. Start at midnight, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, on that...
To be continued.
We enjoyed a great distilled beer today. When you get to the bottom, it gets even more sour, so look forward to that.
I'm still getting the butter.
Or you should shake it before you open it. Cheers.
Have a good one.